Just want to let you know that off the top of the interview. Pardon?
Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I can actually.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I did want to thank you for taking the time to speak with me about this movie. I appreciate that. And my first question for you is, I know you're coming up on the 3-year anniversary of your son's death, and I just wanted to find out how you're coping.
Fairly well, as can be expected. I have kind of moved on from the devastation now because I am really kind of understanding my role on a larger scale and a bigger purpose, and Jordan's role on a larger scale for a bigger purpose. And I can't really be angry or mad or devastated because in the prayers that I prayed for Jordan and myself for years and years, I asked God that we would be used for his purpose. So here I'm receiving, not in the way I expected to be used, but most certainly, the way that God would use me. And so I am being used just as well as Jordan. And so I'm okay with that. I think I'm accepting my role. I'm accepting what God is calling me to do. Because I know the work that I'm being given to do is not just for Jordan. It's way beyond Jordan. It's for a bigger purpose. And so I'm doing okay. I think I'm starting to adjust to it. I'm learning tremendous amounts of information. I'm learning so much about the gun culture. Learning deeply my moral beliefs and understanding and how much it plays a really large part in being able to really change the tide of gun violence in this country. So I'm accepting and moving forward.
Okay. My second question for you is, how did you get involved in Armor of Light?
I met Abigail Disney, which has been such a tremendous blessing. I met Abigail Disney through my attorney, John Phillips, my civil attorney. And I'm not exactly sure who contacted whom between John and Abby,
okay.
But we, came to meet Abby here in New York City through my attorney.
Okay. And when you were first approached about this film, were you skeptical? Do you have any concerns? What was your thought about it?
Well, of course, I had to do a little bit of my research, researching Abigail Disney and everything, because I just knew she was part of the Disney family, but I didn't really know who she was.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was in awe. I was very surprised, that she would be interested in our story. But then as I got a chance to talk with her and find out where her heart was and, her willingness to really kind of do far more investigating and research and finding out more about public opinion in terms of, the NRA gun lobby and the moral part of that, I thought, well, wow, I consider it a blessing and an honor to be able to work with her. It wasn't really until pretty much towards the end of filming that I really understood that she was only following Reverend Shank and myself. I thought all along, because she said, she was talking with different organizations and individuals, and that I would just be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not my understanding that, I would be one of the principals. And then so towards the end of filming, I just asked the crew, well, who else is she filming? And they said, just you and Reverend Shank.
Wow.
And I thought, wow.
Hmm.
So, I didn't really have any idea.
Now, what was your opinion of Reverend Shank, I guess, before you met him and now since you've met him?
Well, of course, I didn't know of Reverend Shank. I had to Google him and read about him on Wikipedia. But I was really excited to meet him because I felt that he was the kind of person and the voice that I needed to be able to speak with. Of course, my community, the minority community, we're all about, safer gun laws and, curbing that gun violence in the country. But I truly believe that, the white evangelical community, most of them large, you know, a lot of them are gun owners and NRA members. That was the community that I thought that, you know, we really needed to speak to morally. So when Abby said to me, you know, there's this pastor, Reverend Shane, that I think you might be interested in speaking to, I mean, I was just nervous, absolutely very nervous, because I didn't know how well received I would be by him.
Mm-hmm.
But excited at the same time because it was my opportunity to really try to engage someone that was absolutely not like me
mm-hmm.
in this conversation.
And do you think you changed his mind at all about gun control laws?
Well, he says I did.
Okay.
He says that my appeal to him and my story and my coming to him was the impetus for pushing him, giving him that last bit of inertia
mm-hmm.
to move forward on, you know, those stirrings, the moral stirrings that he had about, you know, the problems of gun violence in the country.
And what is he working on now, as far as you know, as far as that is concerned?
Well, most definitely. He has some new initiatives that he's working on, which I'm probably sure I cannot talk about. But definitely just beginning to galvanize a lot of support from pastors, you know, across the country that have felt the same things that he's been feeling. You know, being morally disturbed by the gun culture in our country. And as he says, you know, it disturbs me to think that people in the United States, the only way that they're going to solve or resolve their problems is to shoot people dead.
Mm-hmm.
And so based upon, you know, the inkling that, you know, the preservation of life is foremost for him, you know, absolutely pro-life from beginning to end, then this is now him stepping out of the boat, so to speak, into the water, treading the water, and going towards what he believes God is calling him to do.
Now, why do you think, you know, people on, you know, evangelical right are so adamant about having guns?
Well, I will say I can speak to you from that viewpoint as being a minority, as a black woman. I think what we have is just an over-exaggerated, unadulterated fear that America is changing.
Okay.
And that, you know, America is growing to be far more diverse, and that there may be an element in this country that believes that they're losing their power and that they want their power back. And so the NRA gun lobby feeds right into that with creating and instilling fear in the community, and fear in people that you're going to be gunned down, you're going to be raped, you're going to be, you know, I mean, you know, you're going to be carjacked. I mean, all those kinds of things. I think that just plays into the whole ideology that I should be afraid of people that don't think, look, or act like me. And gun violence plays a huge role in that, and it's a matter of kind of like subduing, you know, that element that we're afraid of. And so I think from my perspective, that's what I believe is happening in the country. When I talk to people around the country, and they say, oh, the government, and I trust them. Well, who do you mean by the government? Because I want them to say to me President Obama, because that's really who they mean. And so I have to,
okay.
it's really who they mean. And so I trust them to say, well, who do you mean by the government? And then when they say, well, you know, the administration, so I know exactly what they're talking about. And I have to say to them, trust me, that is not President Obama's goal to take every gun out of every household. He, you know, he is for Second Amendment rights, but he understands unequivocally that, you know, we have to have some tempered laws in place to protect those rights, to protect the rights of individuals that are not gun owners, that don't want to use guns, that don't want to walk in fear in this country of being gunned down.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to really say, you know, I understand what his platform is. And it is not to take your guns. It is not to come in and control your household. And so the NRA gun lobby spends a lot of time and rhetoric on pushing that. And that is just absolutely not the truth.
So what types of laws do you think need to be made or what types of laws need to be eradicated. I'm sure you want the Stand Your Ground laws to be eradicated, but hey, have you ever given thought to what types of laws would be most effective?
And let me say, Stand Your Ground, I'm not working for it. I don't think it should be eradicated because in some instances it can work properly if it's used properly. And an individual should be able to protect themselves against imminent threat and danger, but not based upon a, you know, the threat has to be credible. Mm-hmm. It can't be based upon a perception of the threat. And that's the way the law is interpreted now, based upon a perception. I think that's very, very dangerous.
Okay.
So in some regards, yeah, the law can work if it's used properly. You know, but I think, you know, background check legislation is the number one way that we know in this country to deter a lot of the crimes with guns that we see here. You know, when individuals can walk into gun shows with no, and buy guns, no background check, online sales, no background check, straw purchases, people are selling guns to their family members. You know, we know most definitely that women in large numbers go into gun shows and gun stores and buy guns because if an individual in their family is a convicted felon and can't legally get a gun, they're buying guns for them. So these kinds of loopholes, these are the kinds of things that have to be addressed. Child access prevention, making sure that, you know, people, law-abiding citizens that have guns, you know, making sure that those guns are safely put away so that children don't have access to them. Domestic abusers, making sure that there's, you know, legislation put in place, background check legislation that prevents domestic abusers from getting their hands on guns if they've already been convicted as a domestic abuser, because we know the number one way that women are dying in this country in domestic violence confrontations is by a gun. So we, you know, there are a lot of big moving parts and pieces to the gun culture.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of laws have to be examined, but we know the number one way is just background check legislation. We know that 90% of Americans in this country agree with what I'm talking about. They all agree that, yeah, there has to be some sensible solutions put in place to close the loopholes that allow people to do the things that they're doing with their guns in this country.
Do you think that background legislation would have helped with what happened at the college in Oregon or at Emmanuel AME?
Absolutely, because we know that there was a default period with that background check in Charleston that allowed the young man to buy the gun that he used in the Charleston shooting.
Mm-hmm.
So there again, you know, we've got some defaults in the existing laws that allow people to, you know, that are allowing gun sellers to sell their guns to people that really aren't even supposed to have them.
Hmm. Okay. And my final question for you, I know you were involved in another documentary, 3.5 Minutes.
Yes.
And that's supposed to be coming to HBO this fall?
November 23rd.
November 23rd, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any times or just to look out, I guess, on their website?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And just, you know, nationwide it will drop, you know, November 23rd. But you can definitely go on to the website there.
Okay. All right. Well, that is my final question for you. Let me turn off this recorder.
Thanks.